Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Focus Group podcast. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark, and this week we're taking you to Arizona. And the political scene there is getting to be hotter than the pavement on Interstate 10 in July. I've been worried about Biden's chances in Arizona, in part because of Donald Trump making inroads with Hispanic voters, and because of the fact that Biden only won the state by 10,000 votes in 2020. Then, on April 9th, the Arizona Supreme Court dropped a bomb on us. They ruled the state had to adhere to an 1864 law enacted before Arizona was even a state, and which essentially outlawed all abortions there. Now, there's been a lot of discourse about how salient the Dobbs decision was in 2022, and whether Donald Trump is hobbled by the fact that he appointed three of the Supreme Court justices who helped overturn Roe v. Wade. So we're talking to Arizona women who are swing voters and even 2020 Trump voters about how they're thinking about this decision and Arizona politics more broadly. My guest today is Yvonne Winget Sanchez, democracy reporter at The Washington Post, who is based there in Arizona. Yvonne, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm a huge fan of the show.
Oh, amazing. Well, I am a huge fan of your coverage, and you are the perfect person to talk about this. I'm so glad you're there. So glad you got to watch these groups because they were doozies and very interesting. And you've covered Arizona since like 2001. Long time you've been there. And so how do you compare the political landscape today versus, you know, the last 20 plus years?
We have always had this strain of individualism and libertarianism and, you know, keep your government out of my life sort of sentiment in Arizona. It's run pretty strong. It's run pretty deep. It's deeper and much more extreme than it's ever been. And I think really what we've seen more than any of my time, certainly covering politics here in the state through Obama's presidency, through the rise of the Tea Party, et cetera, is a hardening and a deepening of sentiments in a way that is extraordinarily troubling, mostly because people just don't agree on, let alone the issues, but the fundamental facts of an issue. And so we are starting from completely different places. And I think that is like the most underrated thing that is shaping, you know, Arizona politics and voter sentiment, not just around abortion, but around, you know, border security, some of these Trump trials, Biden's presidency, so many of the big issues that we see today. So it's sort of like this confluence of extremism mixed with this individualism and really sort of like this psyche that government is just a joke, right? And like, just can't be trusted. And so I think those are really like the fundamental themes that can be seen through any debate, no matter what issue. Arizona 2024.
Yeah. No, you're hitting on something that's actually interesting that's worth kind of observing, which is that the thing about swing states that is different from many other states is that, like, we all know the country is hyper-polarized and sort of defined by a kind of negative partisanship. But when you're in a swing state, it's like you're in this petri dish of that hyper-partisan back and forth. And it doesn't happen in most states because, like, most states, you actually do have a dominant political coalition, right? Like, if you're in Arkansas, Arkansas has a pretty dominant culture that is a red culture. If you're in California, you've got a pretty dominant culture that is a blue culture. And that doesn't mean that you don't have lots of sort of mini factions or, like, you know, blue urban centers and red states. Of course, you have those things. But in a swing state, and maybe in Arizona, almost in particular, because its Republican Party was sort of defined for a long time by kind of a John McCain mavericky thing. And I know that one of my observations about Arizona Republican politics is how since John McCain's passing, and even before that, the Republican Party there was going off the rails, was just getting so crazy and extreme. Kelly Ward, who were some of the other big players down there?
I mean, there was Joe Arpaio, there was Jeanne Brewer, who wagged her finger in the face of Obama on the tarmac in front of everyone, like this defiance, right? Against judges, against people in power, against government, and against, in some ways, like the very institutions that were also investigating them, Both of those big Republican prominent national figures faced DOJ investigations. And people sort of forget that. That was sort of like a preview and a precursor to sort of what we then ended up seeing on the national scene. But yeah, like McCain, when he faced the backlash from the border issue and the illegal immigration issue in particular, what did he do? He recruited PCs. He tried to take the party back, right? He was successful with that. He was sort of able to keep them at bay. What we've seen more recently is sort of a disengagement by, you know, Doug Ducey, Jan Brewer. Like, they would show up, give the speeches, shake hands, be gone. They didn't see the party as necessary to their sort of electoral wins, and they were right. Like, they didn't really need it. But then what happened? You handed the microphone to the party over to the more extreme voices. And while the more moderates might not think that they're a big deal or that they matter, you let them control the narrative. And that's sort of really what we ended up seeing over the past, you know, 8 years, certainly through Trump's presidency, was this very influential, deepening, hardening sort of effort with the base. And you can't underestimate that that's sort of what helped bring us to this moment.
Yeah. And I'm just thinking, even in the, you know, more recent figures, you've got your Mark Finchams, your Blake Masters, your Carrie Lake. I'm also just going to define PCs for everybody, which is precinct captains, meaning that McCain was able to go like recruit people to stand up for him that would show up at the precincts, and which is a great point and a testament to his sort of how what an institution he was in the state, how much infrastructure he had. All right. So I want to start with a group of 2020 Trump voters who were kind of down on Trump. We talked to this particular slice quite a bit, people who'd voted for him twice, but kind of held their nose and are like really mad that he's the nominee again. Oftentimes there are people who were upset after January 6th. Sometimes they just like don't want to see this guy again. In this case, Trump's positions on abortions were a liability for him in this group. Both groups are all women. We only talked to women for this episode. And so we asked them in kind of an open-ended way how they were thinking about Trump in 2024. And this is a sample of what we heard.
And following all the things that we've learned about Donald Trump since he first was president in 2016, considering all the court cases, just a lot of decisions he's made as well, come out on certain things that I feel very strongly about, abortion rights being one thing, things like his complete lack of character is just detrimental to the country. And so for myself, I don't see myself voting for him this time.
I have a hard time voting for somebody whose personal character just seems so poor. And then like my own values around like abortion and women's rights are just not aligning with him.
I used to be extremely conservative. When you get pregnant in your almost 40s, you do start to see abortion issues as a completely different aspect. So the fact that I don't know where he stands on abortion, it'd be really hard for me to vote for him.
Now, that was not the only woman in these groups who shared sort of a very personal experience related to abortion or a high-risk pregnancy, and we're going to hear a lot more about that later in the show, so consider this, I guess, your trigger warning. Is that what the kids say? But there's like some real talk coming from some of these women, but I got to tell you what was so interesting to me, Yvonne, about this group. In other focus groups that I do, and I do them just constantly, abortion almost never comes up in the open-ended questions. Like you say, hey, how are things going in the country? People say bad, generally. And then they talk about crime, inflation, the economy, gas prices, immigration. Only every now and then does somebody throw abortion in at the top. This group, though, did. And I can only assume it is because in Arizona right now, this issue has gone from a lower salience issue to an extremely high salience issue. Can you just describe, like, what was it like when this decision came down in the state?
I think very few people were prepared for the scenario in which the 1864 law is put into effect. Everyone sort of presumed, Republicans included, that the court would uphold the 15-week ban that allowed exceptions, was less restrictive than the 1864 law. Republicans presumed they would have cover, you know, and that the court has decided the issue is put to rest and everyone's just going to move on. This isn't an issue. We're going to talk about all these other issues that are at the forefront of people's minds. Well, obviously the opposite happened. And so it did send shockwaves Very few things can do that these days. It's Arizona. Like, we are used to a lot of drama. This was kind of insanity, mostly because, and I've listened to both of these like focus groups in full. I learned so much. I wasn't necessarily surprised, because when you talk to regular people, especially these swing voters, a lot of moms, nobody wants to think about abortion. Like, it's not going to be the thing that you want to talk about unless somebody reminds you of what the stakes are. You hear 1864, you hear Civil War, you hear the elimination of a right. As a swing female, probably of voting age, it's probably going to take you like middle age and beyond. You understand that life is super fragile. People talk about like this reverence of life in these focus groups, which I think really sort of nailed it. People want to have a reverence for life. They will talk about that reverence. They will also talk about balancing the reverence and reconciling really poor potential health outcomes and what it feels like to pray for a miracle, but to also maybe know that a miracle might not happen. And that is a difficult but commonplace for not just women, but men, fathers, grandfathers, people who watch their daughters go through really difficult moments like this, to really sort of understand. And so when you delve into this issue and you look at this headline, it looks very scary. And it has made people here for the last couple of weeks think really long and hard about what the consequences of this could be, not just for them, but for their grandchildren. And that's really at the top of people's minds. And it's still at the top of people's minds because we are in the same position a week later.
Yeah, I want to get to the Trump to Biden voters and how they talked about this, but really quickly, what is the state of play right now? Like, if you needed to get an abortion in Arizona, what happens? Because I know the Attorney General, Chris Mayes, said she wasn't going to prosecute any cases under the law, but like, is the only option if you need an abortion to leave the state?
Like with so much of this, it's up for debate.
Okay.
Both sides are fighting. The Attorney General has said she's not going to prosecute and that this 1864 law doesn't take effect until later in the summer. At least one major clinic has said that they're going to continue offering these services until then. I suspect we're going to see some litigation over the timing of this. At the same time, you do have people who are offering to help people if they do need to get an abortion or want to get an abortion to go out of state. So
I see.
Legally, according to the state prosecutor, they're still allowed.
All right. Thanks for that. Okay. So I want to dive into how our focus groups talked about this issue. The first two speakers you're about to hear are those sort of Trump to Biden voters talking about Trump's stance on abortion. And then the rest are talking about the decision more broadly. Let's listen.
Hasn't he also said that he would support punishing anyone involved in abortions or supporting or transporting or in any way, you know, contributing to abortion? So, you know, what do you believe?
I don't trust anything he says. So there's too many situations to have a law that disallows for everything. And, you know, we have a right to bear arms. We have a right to do what we feel is right for us, for our bodies and our lives. And I am not saying that I support abortion as a form of birth control. I am saying that there have to be choices, and you can't just say, it's not allowed, period, end of story. And there's cases where women's lives are at risk and nobody wants to step up and help them either because they're afraid. Caregivers should not be afraid of what happens legally. And you have to make a choice over doing what's best for an individual versus, am I going to get prosecuted?
I'm a strict Roman Catholic and I have my own feelings about when life begins. I don't like to pass judgment. I don't know. And this one seems a little strict. Of course, like late term, I'm not for any of those things, but this one seems a little too much. I'm for putting it back on the ballot and letting the people of Arizona decide. I don't like tyrannical three people deciding the fate for something so sensitive.
Well, I'm definitely pro-life, but I do agree there are situations way beyond people's control. And you have to have some allowances, especially for the life of the mother. And again, this is the 20th century and not 1864.
I sort of felt like Arizona was becoming like Gilead from The Handmaid's Tale. So, you know, it's very disappointing to me. And I also am Roman Catholic. You know, I don't support necessarily abortion, but I do believe there are some instances where the woman should have an opportunity to decide and not the patriarchy.
I am pro-choice. I am also Roman Catholic, but I believe that it's everybody's choice. I don't agree with an abortion per se, but that's my body and that is my choice. So that's honestly how I feel. I have daughters. I have, you know what I mean? I have a 17-year-old. God forbid if my daughter goes down the street and gets raped, she's forced to have a child.
I'm a special needs mom, and every pregnancy I was faced with life or death situations in my body. So I'm very close to this topic of if I didn't have choice, which I chose to keep all my children, that was my own personal thing. But to be alone in that room as a single mom and not have that choice, knowing the burden of a life with a child that requires way more than a typically developing, definitely changed my point of view on why it should be a choice.
So this is not the first abortion episode I've done. I've done a couple. And when you do them and you convene groups of women, this is how it always goes. It is always women talking about the difficult times they've had. And they were telling us deeply personal stories. And I want to respect the personal nature of that. But it goes to show how this issue is different from so many other policy issues. Because, and when you were talking before, like men go through this too, right? When their wife's having a child and they have a pregnancy that doesn't come to term, or they have complications, or the life of the mother is under threat. And it's much more common than you'd think when you listen to these groups, because it is either the women themselves or they all know somebody who has experienced this. And I got to say, you know, we just heard this refrain that we hear some version of this all the time in the groups, which is, I'm pro-life, but I believe in a woman's right to choose. The first time I heard that, I almost chuckled at it. But it's all the time. You just hear it in every single group. And even people who think of themselves as pro-life, they really bristle at the no exceptions talk. So you've written about how Republicans in Arizona are grappling with the political fallout from this decision. And you wrote that one state legislator once sponsored a bill that would let a pregnant woman drive in the carpool lane because their babies are full humans. And even that legislator is among people who would maybe vote to repeal this law, presumably because it's too extreme. So do you think there's going to be a legislative fix to this? Like, walk us through how the legislature, particularly the Republicans, have dealt with or not dealt with this issue.
Republicans fundamentally understand that the 1864 law drives out Democratic voters. It drives moderate voters and Republican voters away from their party. They will lose control of the state legislature, according to about a dozen Republicans that we spoke to about this, if they do not do anything to repeal the 1864 law. They are fully aware of the electoral consequences of this. Based on conversations with so many of those Republicans, I think eventually they are hoping by May to repeal that law and potentially referring to the ballot a version of the 15-week law that included exceptions. It very much could mirror what Republicans passed at the state legislature, signed into law by then Governor Doug Ducey in 2022. It's publicly, at least with the electorate, much more acceptable when compared with the 1864 law. So that is their wish. Who knows if they can get there? Republicans narrowly control both chambers. They need to pick up that support. They think they can do it, but it's going to come with a price. Like, they could face punishment by their party. They could face punishment by the legislature. Like, it's probably going to get a lot uglier before it gets less uglier.
Yeah. Can I just ask? So yes, it's majority Republican, but the problem is they must have some super hardliners that don't want to see this repealed, right? Who are like, this is fine. So they're banking on Democrats to bail them out on this. And if I were a Democrat in Arizona and knew that this would both put the state much more likely in Biden's column, would allow us to take over the chamber, I wouldn't bail these guys out. I'd want this one on the ballot because it will get overturned if it's on the ballot. So why would they allow a compromise to go onto the ballot?
So some of the more hardliners, and these are going to be people who probably do not on the record vote in favor of repealing, but understand the electoral consequences and want their colleagues in those swing districts to go ahead and do it for them. These people will tell you, look, we're going to lose the state if we don't repeal this law. And what saves the most lives? Does saving the most lives allow us to temporarily take a loss, side with Democrats, repeal the law, refer something to the ballot, perhaps be able to maintain control of one, maybe two chambers, and in the end, long term, save more lives? That's the calculation.
And is getting them on side, is it helped by the fact that clearly Donald Trump is panicked now? His campaign has got to be panicked about Arizona. So, like, are they making calls? Carrie Lake, you know, when this came down, cut like a 5-minute, one of those soft focus things, being like, my choice is not every woman's choice. Everyone's different. Suddenly, you know, like they were in full damage control mode. And so is there just a ton of pressure on the hardliners?
There's a ton of pressure. I mean, but here's the thing, like they don't need very many votes. They need 2 votes in the Senate, which they have. It is a pressure cooker. They're hearing from people on all sides. They're hearing from their wives. They're hearing from their daughters. They're hearing from their pastors. They're talking to each other. You know, they're talking to their campaign managers. They've got reporters all around the world, literally. A crew from abroad was following these guys around last week. Like, they are in a pressure cooker. And while they are used to being in the heat in Arizona, this is probably the biggest storyline that we have seen in the 20 years I've been here.
Okay. So I want to hear from some of these down on Trump voters and how they talked about this decision. The previous ones were sort of the swing voters, Trump to Biden. And so it makes sense how they were talking about it. But I was surprised, actually, and I do these a lot, but I was still a little surprised about how these 2020 Trump voters talked about Trump's position on abortion. Let's listen.
He's been backward and forward on that particular point. And I think that he's starting to acquiesce to the polls a little bit on that one, maybe. I'm not sure. That's one of my issues with Trump, is my level of trust.
I wish just in general we had more reverence for life. And I don't think Trump shows that by his comments about women. And I just think that that is one piece of not allowing people their own medical freedom, their own liberties, to not be able to choose an abortion if they need it.
I'm pro-life, I guess, in a perfect world, but I'm pro-choice because how can you force somebody to give birth and then we are in a housing crisis? Of course, nobody is going in there having a fun time aborting their baby. It's a horrendous choice that no woman wants to make, but realistically, it's like, oh, here, have this baby and be in poverty and we won't help you. And you can get a $15 an hour job when your rent's $2,000. I think that this rule in 1865 is ridiculous and it should have stuck with Ducey and he signed the 15-week thing. If the state votes on that and it's on a ballot, it's up to the citizens to really research who we're voting for and what we are voting for, which is why I think local elections are almost more important than federal.
I think that there needs to be more education, more availability for over-the-counter preventative type of products. But I don't feel that I am the person to say to person ABC, I don't know enough about this woman, her circumstances. Was it rape? Was it incest? Does she have all kinds of problems? What is the real issue here? I don't feel I personally can make that decision for her.
I am pro-choice, but I think it's possible to be pro-choice and anti-abortion at the same time. And with pro-choice comes, you know, sexual education and all of that, and access to birth control, access to information about women's bodies. And I think the more you increase that education, the more you increase that access is actually how you get less abortions in general.
Were you surprised how many in this Trump voting group were pro-choice?
No.
I think it was like all but 3.
No,
I wasn't really either. I see this in the Trump groups all the time, how many are pro-choice, but tell me why it didn't surprise you.
One of the big themes that I heard from a couple of these women and I hear from voters all the time is like free will. I think a lot of times we think about that like independence or keep your government out of my life. But it's also like with the Christianity, with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Catholicism, people of faith, it's that free will. That's the essence of a lot of the arguments. It's like, who am I to tell you? Who is Trump to tell us? Who is the Supreme Court to tell me what to do with my body? And I think that is like one of the most underrated trends, especially among people of faith, who are these swing voters out, especially in the suburbs, who gave Trump a chance, thought he had good intentions, are now having second thoughts on this specifically.
Yeah, on this specifically. I mean, this was a problem with that. I got to say, one of the things that was interesting, there were a couple that you heard from that ultimately were still willing to vote for Trump, but a bunch of them weren't. And they weren't exactly like, boy, I'm going to go vote for Biden. A lot of them were Kennedy curious. And what was interesting to me about the Kennedy curious is it like dovetailed with the anti-vax sentiment, because right. It was like, you can't tell me what I put in my body. You can't get between people and their doctors. Like it was, as you are saying, this sort of libertarian, this is my choice, leave me alone kind of thing. Did that jump out at you?
Yes and no. I was just having a conversation with a colleague about this last week because I kept hearing these former Trump voters who are so like into Kennedy. And it's like, I was trying to understand because their messages are so similar on a lot of different issues, particularly like health related ones and COVID. It's like, why? But this is why. I mean, hearing these voters sort of talk about that in the context of like this larger issue and like the free will and invoking Handmaid's Tale, you know, that spells like massive trouble for any candidate if people are talking about you in those terms. They don't want to go to Biden. Swing voters are really concerned about his age and, you know, the gas prices here are some of the highest in the country, like the border, like all of that really is a thing and is really on their minds. But this guy, right, kind of in the way that Trump might have made them feel back in 2015, 2016, maybe he has good intentions. Don't know much about him. Like, let's check him out. He's interesting.
Yeah.
Why not?
I think there's just like so many people who are trying to figure out like who does Kennedy pull from? And it's possible that it could be different place to place. And I think obviously when like there's going to be a ton of voter education done about him, but it did strike me as quite interesting that the through line for Kennedy with people, like they had a linear idea of personal freedom that he fit into. And I thought that was super interesting. So, you know, one of the things I've always said about the abortion issue for people who've listened to the show, like I said, we've done abortion a number of times, is that a lot like, you know, was made in 2022 of abortion being the thing that sort of torpedoed a bunch of the Trump-backed candidates on the Republican side. And I've always kind of thought, sort of, like, to me, it was actually about extremism in general. I did a lot of focus groups in Arizona in 2022. And the way that people talk about Blake Masters is they're like, you know, this guy is nuts. He's an election denier. He is a crazy position on abortion. And he likes the Unabomber. It was like all wrapped into a narrative of extremism. I heard people in the group talk about how frustrated they were with the extremes. Do you think the Democrats will be able to hang this issue around Trump the way that they hung it around Masters and maybe even Carrie Lake last go around?
The issue of extremism specifically?
Well, I guess I'm going to say the way that I think about abortion is like it's a gateway into extremism, right? Like people, if they have an extreme position on abortion, it colors the whole person as extreme. But I wonder if that works the same way for Trump because people actually view him often as a cultural moderate, especially on the issue of abortion, because nobody believes that he has an ounce of sexual morality in him. It didn't come up in this group, but like people make jokes in the groups about like, that guy probably paid for an abortion. That's just like a thing that happens sometimes. And he gets a benefit from that on this issue. I can see if it's literally on the ballot, that's bad for Trump. But like, does it hurt him specifically?
I agree that people tend to give him more of a pass, but they don't trust him. But the down ballot effect, I think that they hold more local officials who we heard them talk about in so many ways are so much more consequential than the people who are 2,000 miles away across the country and are always just fighting and yelling and screaming at each other. They hold accountable the local people who they define as extreme, right? The Mark Finchems, who ran for Secretary of State in 2022, the Blake Masters, the, you know, Carrie Lake, who lost by 17,000 votes, a raft of state lawmakers up and down the ballot. They held them accountable in 22. And largely, if you go and talk to some of these people, especially out in the suburbs, because of statements or actions that these people took that these voters felt were extreme. So maybe Trump gets a pass and some of these other people don't. Maybe like we're completely off. Who knows? But I do think that making the case of extremism, especially in a place like Arizona that was ground zero to try to undo the results of the 2020 election, you know, still have litigation winding its way through the legal system over the 2022 election, it's a pretty powerful case to try to prosecute. Will it be successful? Who knows?
So one thing that cannot be overstated about these conversations about abortion is how intensely personal it is for these women. Obviously, it's different than other political issues. And that can really run up sometimes against people's priors. So as I alluded to earlier, that was super evident in our group of Trump voters. Now, these are down on Trump voters, and they were very clear that they didn't trust him. And sometimes people ask me about the focus groups, like, well, why don't you put Democrats and Republicans in there? And I'm like, why? So they fight with each other and nobody feels safe to sort of say what they think. But this group, because it was pretty narrowly tailored, it was all Trump voters who like didn't think he was doing a good job. I think they felt safe enough to sort of talk about these things, and they really got deep into it. And some people told so much personal information in this that I want to make sure that, you know, nobody could figure out who they are. But I will say one woman told a story about having an abortion when she was very young and also then lost some children later when she was trying to get pregnant, and not just miscarriages, but also full term, but it didn't happen. It was like an incredibly difficult story, which led other people to open up about what happened to them. So let's listen.
Like when I was pregnant too, there was a lot of complications too, a lot of possibilities that the baby might not be formed correctly. Everything turned out okay. But in circumstances like that, I didn't want to continue with the pregnancy. I was at 15 weeks and I was at a point where I would have had to go to a different state. I don't think a woman being a Christian should ever have to be in a situation where she has to travel out of her way to do something that she doesn't even want to do.
When I was 19, I found myself in a situation where I was pregnant, and the person that I thought was my partner had taken off, and I faced a very difficult decision. So I'm not proud to share, but at the time, because of family circumstances and other things I was going through, I ended up getting an abortion. It's something that stuck with me my entire life. After that, when I did get married and my first couple of pregnancies, I lost. So I have a very high value of life, and the sanctity of life is so near and dear. I have, not to cry, but I have two beautiful daughters, and I love them more than life itself. And I can't imagine my life without them. I value life so incredibly highly, but I also know that there's so many things that happen to people that we can't possibly judge, you know, why they make the decisions that they do. We just need to provide them the opportunities to make the best choice for themselves, that child, and their future as well. So
I have to say, you're not alone. I faced the same situation when I was 20 and made the same choice.
You aren't alone. I had to make the same choice not that long ago, actually. And that was because of how horrible the state of the world is right now. So yeah. You are not alone. And you were very brave for sharing that. And I think a major issue of this is the shame attached to it, yes, to where women are carrying that shame because yes, it's just placed upon us. But there is nothing to be holding on to of that shame.
Okay, so in this part of the focus group, the women were doing this thing that I've seen women do when we talk about this. Like one woman was like holding up a heart with her hands, like they rallied to each other's support. But it is notable that in a group of 9 women, 3 people had personal experiences with abortion, and then others had experiences with a pregnancy that was like incredibly traumatic and where it wasn't clear the baby would survive and also were threatened to the life of the mother. I mean, just like half the group had these. And that is the thing that I think gets lost sometimes in the politics of this, is just how people don't talk about it as often. But I think during this election, they are. Like, I think that you will hear more of these stories as we go. And you pointed this out, and I think it's so interesting. Even women who've had abortions talk about how much they value life. Like, I grew up with this binary choice, but man, listen to people talk about this issue now for the last however many years. There's nothing binary about it. So what do you think what's happening in Arizona? Does it tell you anything about the future of abortion politics in America now that Roe is no more?
I think that however the state legislature goes, whether they vote to repeal the 1864 law, keep it in place, I think that's unlikely. Whatever they end up referring to the ballot on the November ballot to compete with an abortion access ballot that would peg, you know, about 24 weeks or, you know, viability of a fetus to access to abortion. I think that is a test case for where the rest of the country ends up landing on this issue. In talking with a lot of lawmakers and just like swing voters and people who are like casually absorbing this, don't necessarily pay a lot of attention to the ins and outs. It's just too much for them. Like, they're worn out, right? 6 weeks feels like too little. You don't have a lot of information. 12 weeks feels like maybe a little bit better. 15 weeks, you start to get more information, genetic testing. And, you know, especially for people who are over 35 years old, you know, you're at advanced maternal age, then you really get more information and ultrasounds. And 24 weeks might feel like a lot. And so maybe somewhere in between there, for a place like Arizona that is so swingy and likely will be swingy for at least the next decade, perhaps, that feels like it could help set a pace and an agenda for what is acceptable among modern Republicans having to reconcile and balance like the mood of the electorate broadly with their personal, deeply held beliefs of trying to protect lives and the sanctity of lives and saving children. That's sort of like the big theme that I think we'll be watching really closely.
Yeah, I think that the Republicans are only going to go through so many cycles with this can be put on ballots before they're going to try to figure out how to find some kind of a national compromise. Even that itself, though, is going to be just a wild fight when it happens, because as we said, not an easy issue. So I can't let you out of here without talking about the Senate race. Kyrsten Sinema is running for re-election, so it's almost certainly going to be MAGA GOP candidate Carrie Lake versus the Democratic Congressman Ruben Gallego in November. So let's hear how a couple of Trump to Biden voters talked about Gallego, followed by how some others talked about Lake.
He seems like a true like civil servant. He seems like a dedicated politician, a more traditional politician.
Yeah.
That's what I miss about the Republican Party. I miss Matt Salmon. I miss all the people that I like that were moderate, more level-headed, a Liz Cheney, a Mitt Romney. I just wish we could get back to like more decorum.
I don't know if he's honest because he's a politician, but he's more normal. I mean, some of these people are just incapable of making a right decision. And that's where I see Carrie Lake. I guess I'd vote for Ruben. Given the choice.
I don't know where this came from because, you know, she was on the news forever. But recently I listened to a few things, like when she does her rallies or whatever. I don't know what kind of country we're in. But just to hear her, just to be like, is this real? Like, has she changed a little bit? Like, is she like back down like normal? I mean, it is bizarre. She lied. I mean, it's lie after lie after lie after lie. And she's crazy.
And she should have stuck with reporting the news. She was great at
I think she's a nutcase.
Yeah.
She's just so out there and out of control. And I just don't understand where she's coming from.
So I want to ask about both these candidates. It doesn't surprise me that people who voted for Biden last time, even though they voted for Trump before, these are people who've affirmatively, though, moved away from Trump. Look at Carrie Lake. There's a lot of like, she's just a mini Trump. Even in the Trump voting groups, there was like, she's just a mini Trump. So she knows what she did wrong last time when she lost the governor's race, like saying, I don't want them again, voters. But is it too late? Is she like baked in the minds of Arizona voters as a nutcase? Or can she get people back on side?
I mean, I think she can get enough voters maybe back on side, but like it has to be a consistent, very disciplined, softer message. And that's not what we have seen from her. She hasn't given the apologies that those, you know, McCain voters, moderate Republican, independent voters want to hear from her. She has, on the one hand, said, we're a big tent party. Sometimes we disagree. I want to move on from the 2020 election and the 2022 election, but she won't say she lost. And people want some sort of ownership and acknowledgement that, like, maybe I shouldn't have said that, or, you know, new page, and that she's not giving them that. So she's got a lot of work to do, according to a lot of voters. A lot of people who were with her have been with her up until very recently. We did see a major, major shift in her with this abortion issue. Obviously, she knows what the potential electoral consequences could be in this. The question is, can she stick with this? Can she help get the repeal effort over the finish line? And can she help translate that to so many of these other issues where some of these voters that you spoke to feel like she's really sort of stepped in it and have a very, very, very negative impression that is so hard to undo? And I will say, some of the language that they were using is not a surprise to me. The difference is, I'm usually asked to put some of those terms off the record, right?
Yeah.
People won't allow you to use the very terms that they use on the record in black and white to capture how they feel about her. But there's still time to undo it.
Interesting. Okay. And then on Gallego, you know, it's funny listening to them because they were like, what a civil servant, normal politician he is. And I was like, this guy's pretty progressive and has had some of his own baggage, but like, that is not clocked for them. They were just like, what a nice young man he seems like. How's he pulling off this I'm just a normie like you kind of thing?
Okay, so I had the same impression when I was listening to these women. It reminds me of, this is Kyrsten Sinema in 2018, right? Like all these people, oh, she's so moderate. She's a centrist. She's a maverick. She's very responsible. Like she takes her job seriously and she's willing to buck her party. Look at her voting record, right? She sides with Democrats almost always. And same thing with Reuven, you know, big progressive back in the day. Like, has he evolved? Is he positioning himself differently, perhaps on some issues? On the military stuff, he's sort of been pretty consistent on that, pretty hawkish. But I think what voters are looking at is like the baseline. We all know what that baseline looks like in Arizona.
Nuts. Nuts is what you're saying. The baseline is nuts and he is clearing that bar?
We just have a lot to say always. He comes across as responsible, as someone who has served his country. Young, maybe full of ideas, maybe in the same way that they size up Kennedy. Someone worth giving a shot. Look at the options. Maybe it's worth, you know, crossing the party line and giving the guy a shot.
Okay. Yvonne, thank you so much for joining us. This was a great conversation. And thanks to all of you for listening to the Focus Group podcast. Remember to subscribe on YouTube and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And we will see you next week.